Tess, and this is the NESGP, the Art of GP Locoming podcast, and I'm with Judith Harvey to talk about her latest article for the Sessional GP magazine on the on a film that you saw recently, Judith, on the Faroe Islands. So welcome, Judith. Nice to have you again. Tell us a bit about this this article you've written and what you've based it on.
Well, it's a few months ago now. We saw this film, The Islands and the Whales, at a documentary cinema in London. Went because it sounded interesting and because nobody knows, I certainly didn't know much about the Faroes, had a few impressions, and found the film totally immersing. It's complex. It doesn't have a voiceover. It lets the people in the film and the events in the film speak for themselves. It's all the cross currents of what's going on and why and all the issues. They gradually emerge, and it's a whole society. Now, this is a very small nation, but it is independent, and it has to be because it's a long way from anywhere else.
Where exactly is the Faroes?
Well, it's about halfway between Shetland and Iceland. It's self-governing within Denmark.
Okay.
There is an independence movement, but Denmark deals with external security and the usual sorts of things, and they organise their own internal affairs. And they have their own language, although most people will speak Danish as well, particularly now.
And there have been settlers on the island. On the islands, there's about 20-odd islands, aren't there, altogether? I believe connected by tunnels and ferry.
Yes, recently these tunnels, must have been a huge investment, have made a lot of difference to communication within the between different little populations in the Faroes, and some of the islands have, or at least now have, only a handful of people living on them.
Yeah, yeah. And so with the total population, I believe, around about 50,000 people or so, which is what I think the Iceland has got, 300,000. So you're talking a very, very small community here. So yeah. where do the whales come into this?
Well, if you live on barren rocks in the North Atlantic, you have to search for food. And the same is true, at least to an extent, of the more barren islands around Scotland. And the traditional sources of food have been birds, and in the Faroes, as in Lewis, there is a googa hunt. The men go and climb on the cliffs and net young gannets for food. And something which I don't think occurs in the Shetlands, in the Hebrides, because there isn't the same opportunity, is to obtain meat from pilot whales. And the tradition has always been that pilot whale pods are relatively small. If one is sighted, the men all get together, easier these days with mobile phones, and the whales are kind of shepherded into a bay. And when they reach the beach, the men on the beach have very sharp knives, and they sever the spinal cord. So it's a quick death of the whale, and the whales are dragged on shore and butchered there and then, and shared out between all the families so that everybody has some meat. And that has kept the Faroese alive since whenever. But obviously, whaling is disapproved of now for very good reasons. The exploitation of whales and the killing the decrease in the whale populations. But the number of whales that the Faroese kill every year is a handful, and pilot whales numbers are sustainable.
Yeah, sorry, I was reading the national annual count of pilot whales is some in the 130,000 or something, and they're killing on average 300 or 400 pilot whales a year in the Faroes. So sustainable, but nevertheless illegal, because according to European and Danish law, apparently it is illegal. But like you're saying, the Faroese are allowed to interpret their own law, and in this case, they have licensed bays for the killing to take place.
Yes, I couldn't give you the exact legal details, but there is some exceptions made under the circumstances under which the Faroese live.
And I often friends share these photographs every year in the summer of these bays, and these images are of intensely bright red seawater with, as you say, men with these great big spinal lances standing in the water hacking these things on their spinal columns. The photos are absolutely shocking and look barbaric. But you've made a point in this article that actually it's that's the kind of what you see is all there is. Well, actually, when you just scratch the surface of that, there's a story underneath that.
Yes, and of course we don't see what goes on in abattoirs. And if you listen to a description of what goes on in almost every British abattoir, it is horrific.
Mm. But it's not on camera, and it doesn't make these.
It's not on camera. And there's plenty of blood spilled in halal killing, but that's not on camera either. I think that to get on a moral high horse about the grind, the way that the whales are killed in Faroes, is to ignore the reality of what goes on with all the meat that's killed, all the animals that are killed in this country for food.
Yes, it's the way it's sort of portrayed in the media. And you said the word grind. Now that's actually the proper Faroese word, isn't it, for this regular kill?
Yes, I don't know exactly how grind translates into English, but I don't think it's grind as in grinding something into the ground. It's just a word that sounds like our word grind, I think.
Yeah, it's a derivative of grinderog or something that I read. Yeah,
like that.
And this is what you do, Judith, isn't it? You take something and you scratch the surface of it, and then you put it in its broadest perspective and broader context, and actually make, because I've seen these photos over the year, and I've never questioned it. I just thought, God, that's barbaric. How on earth does that happen? But of course, you're seeing our fellow human beings on this remote archipelago, hundreds of miles out at sea, with a very small community that they've clearly been doing this for hundreds of years. And as you say, it's a case of survival. Apparently, you said in your article, you can't grow vegetables on the island. To import them is ecologically unsound.
And very expensive. And there are some introduced cattle, I think, but that's a struggle. Mm-hmm. There really is so little. There are such limited opportunities for food to keep people alive.
And there's only so much gannet and puffin you can actually eat in a day without becoming socially embarrassing, from amongst other things. In this film you talk about this great graphic image you portray of Pamela Stevenson coming out of the water, these Californian eco warriors who are all vegetarians and trying to persuade the Faroese to become vegetarian, yet they themselves, for them, it's just a trip down in their car to the local Walmart. But there you have Pamela Anderson coming out of the water in her bathing, in her wetsuit, looking like some saviour. I read a bit about the Sea Shepherds and their campaign, but I was quite struck by how their campaigning momentum seems to be driven pretty much purely by the legal case, which is tenuous, isn't it? But what you then bring into the article is a completely different approach to changing minds and changing behaviours, based on medicine and science.
Yes, the eco warriors went there scolding. Who responds to scolding?
Yeah,
they were going on about whales being sentient, intelligent mammals, which they are. And one of the Faroese asked one of the women, well, so are cows. Why aren't you worried about cows? Oh, we just deal with marine animals.
Oh, that's convenient. Way to get out of an argument.
Yes. But I think, in a way, the rights and wrongs of their whale hunt is much less important than what is happening with pollution, because the Faroes, they say themselves, I think, that they're a kind of canary for pollution. And it's not just the mercury in the whales, which is dangerous. They're discovering that most fish, birds, have high levels of PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, things like DDT, and also fluorides, which are used in the textile industry. Now, they're not used in the Faroes. They've come from a very long way away. They are discovering bits of plastic cutlery from this country in Faroese birds. The Faroese are experiencing pollution which just has come from hundreds and thousands of miles away and is poisoning their people, and endangering their lives in the Faroes. And I think the interesting thing is, you know, these eco warriors actually might do rather well to look at pollution, because it is the pollution that is going to reduce the eating and therefore the killing of whales. And that the story of the Faroese doctor, public health doctor, is absolutely fascinating. The research he has done looking at mercury levels and PCB levels in his population, in his fellow Faroese citizens, and looking at childhood development and adult health, Parkinson's, and finding out, you know, clarifying the dangers that eating these meats presents.
Because this is the mercury you're talking about, which is, because obviously pilot whales are apex feeders, they're top of the food chain, and the mercury is being found in their meat and their blubber, which are both the sort of the main staples of what they eat, but also in their livers and kidneys as well.
Yeah, apparently very highly concentrated in liver and kidney. Yes, the thing I didn't mention in the article, because there's only a limited amount of space, but there's also, as I said, the issue of the DDT and the other industrial chemicals.
Yeah, I hadn't realised.
Adverse effect on health. You know, it's a small, slow, incremental effect, but over the years they have shown that it is affecting children's development, adults' health.
And you make the point in this article about how we as doctors, and I think this article shines a really interesting light on this, is that you've got a very, I mean, the word sexy. You've got this charity doing campaigning work for brilliant causes for all the right reasons, but they're using emotional imagery and emotional words, and it's very high. It hits us right there, doesn't it, with all of that? But it lacks any process. It lacks any evidence, really. And these are they're going for sort of the short, sharp, immediate things, but actually completely ignoring the far more important underlying long-term effects. And when we're talking to our patients about the long-term effects of sugar or alcohol or smoking, it's really, really hard to change that behaviour. The same with these the culling as well. Actually, you bring up the thing of the mercury actually poisoning the children and the pregnant mothers, and now they're recommending pregnant women don't even if you're thinking of becoming pregnant, don't touch any whale meat for at least 3 months before the pregnancy and also during it, because it's been their studies are finding, as you're saying in your article, how it's actually affecting the cognitive behaviour of the children, their attention deficit in children, and the impact it's having there. But it's getting and then even longer term, of course, than international pollution levels that this is all raising from this piece of research from this public health doctor in the Faroes.
Yes, I think get the eco warriors out of the way. They are going for an easy, dramatic target, which is actually insignificant in the whole scheme of the problem that they wish to address. And what are they doing about Japanese whaling? The doctor who was actually featured in the BMJ, they did one of those portraits of him a little while ago, and they had a picture from the film. He said nobody who wasn't Faroese could possibly have done it because they wouldn't have been trusted, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Faroese have very good reasons for not trusting outsiders, even Danes. And he has had his tyres of his car let down, and people are very resistant to attacks, however they are, or to threats, let's say threats, to their traditions. And if you're a Faroese, whaling, Guga hunts is what you do. It's a test of manhood, it's a test of community. You look at the community events around the landing of the meat. It's actual central to binding people in this very harsh environment into a unit, and saying you shouldn't be eating so much whale meat is very threatening. There's a huge amount of denial. It's easy to deny information from an outsider. It's a bit more difficult to deny information from somebody in your own community who is a very trusted, respected member of your community, but that happens.
Even so.
Sorry?
I said even so, that he's from the local community, and he's still, despite all the evidence of being one of them, is still getting this abuse and having his tyres slashed. Incredible.
Yes. It's not universally, but you know, it's not difficult. It's not easy. Not easy. But he's kept on because his people are going to pay the price in certainly the long run and even the medium term from eating whale meat that has got high levels of mercury in it. And, you know, in the end, some people will begin to say, well, maybe we should change. Maybe we shouldn't eat so much. And in the case, in the film, it was a woman who had actually been working with Dr. Wei on the research project of, you know, taking bloods and so on. And eventually there she is with her little girls saying, well, you know, maybe for our children, we should cut down. Her husband was very unwilling, but in the end, she sort of does persuade him to think about it. But moving people along that continuum from pre-contemplation to contemplation, and you know they wobble along that contemplation axis, and along comes Anderson and drives them back to pre-contemplation to defend their way of life. And then it takes a long time to move them back towards considering action and actually acting. But what I thought was interesting is we live in our familiar environment, we work in our familiar environment, we learn ways of dealing with the problems and the patients that consult us, we learn techniques. And I'm not saying we put them into action on automatic pilot, but you know, there's a habit, this is what a patient presents and this is what you do. And I felt, just looking at that film, at a completely different environment from any, well, certainly in England, possibly not less different in the north of Scotland, but so different from the environment in which most of us practice, where you, because it's a small community, isolated, everything is, you can see everything.
Mm.
Stimulated, looking beyond that immediate consultation, again, you know, refreshing one's mind and refreshing one's approach and seeing it in the whole context of the whole community, that patient's place in that community, which is your community as well, and what this means, all that this means to them, as a Faroese, as a husband, wife, parent, as a traditionalist, everything.
So what I'm taking away from this then is we've got here, I think what you're saying, we've got this this film, this article about this extreme scenario here of what comes across as very barbaric killing of animals in a very graphic way, and the way to improve that situation. It turns out that's causing that health risks through mercury poisoning, and the way to do that is through science and investigation and education. But actually, it's pushing against deep rooted cultural, anthropological, sociological types with sort of, I guess in this situation of the whaling, it's almost you're describing these sort of alpha males with big axes and phones and everything and tradition. And actually what is making a change is basically polarizing it to be about little children and their brains and their behavior, and actually the future generations it's having a negative impact on. And then comparing that to how we as are in our GP surgeries when it comes to that smoking patient, the patient who we want to stop smoking, berating them and chiding them takes them back to that pre-contemplation thing, which is actually working against what we're trying to do. And there are probably some very mild but deep-rooted things in people's minds that stop them wanting to change, because I guess it's sort of like a genetic stubbornness almost, because that's just the way they've always done. But it's then to get through that pre-contemplation, almost to bypass the contemplation and to the behavioural change. We've done this with alcohol adverts and smoking adverts, and you put children in it almost. And it's when we're thinking about the future generation and the impact it's having on them. It seems just that's in my mind, that's the way how these two things run parallel almost. Have I is that the point you're trying to make, or have I?
Yes, I think so. I think it's a bit. It's not really correct to label the Faroese men as alpha males, because that comes with such a load of baggage.
Yes.
This is, you know, the Faroese could not live without killing whales, or in the past, now, moderate that slightly. And they need... their environment is so harsh, they have to have structures to and traditions to build community. And that's built on, among other things, many other things, but the whale hunt, because without that you can't live. If you didn't hunt the whales, you died. So I think it's about denial and how you overcome denial, and ultimately it's about the message is about pollution. Mm-hmm. But one of the great things about this film is that there is so much going on. The filmmaker hasn't simplified it to one issue or even two. It's the whole web that is the reality of a community.
Yes, yeah.
There are lots of different strands, lots of different views, lots of different weights to every part of the story. It really is a web of, how do you balance a web?
Yes, when there's so many components to it, so many different ways of approaching it. Yeah.
Yes, but I think there, as you say, that bringing it back to us as GPs in Britain, it's looking at the film makes you stand back, I think, or made me stand back, and consider all the baggage that is behind, that patients bring in, and indeed we bring in, but that we get used to because we know about, we've been to all the talks, we've heard it all before, we have a good idea about patients coming with a lot of baggage, but it's actually good to look at a different situation and be reminded.
Yeah.
To make one alert again, instead of just taking for granted because it's what it is.
And that's what all your articles do, Judith. They make us think about they take us out of our day-to-day context and make us think, sort of give us 180 degree volte face to question what we do. And of course you have your wonderful book as well, Perspectives, which is on Amazon. Just Google on Amazon or search for Judith Harvey Perspectives, and that's got of all your previous articles that you've done for the NESGP. So there's over 100 in there, aren't there? There's some huge number.
It's getting awkward. Well,
yeah.
Yes,
but
not quite
100. No, there's 100 editions of the NESGP magazine, so almost. But anyway, but certainly plenty to read in there. So anyway, Judy, thank you again so much for the wonderful article and for appearing on the NESGP podcast. And I look forward to talking to you about your next article, whatever that's going to be. But very looking forward.
It's going to be, yes.
I bet you don't even know it either, do you? All right, thank you very much, Judith.
Okay, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good day.